2022 Death Holler brought us Season 3, Slash or Pass. It became the classic horror film podcast of its time. And now Death Holler brings us the most shocking season ever. Season 4, Dead or Dead.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
Imagine, if you will, that one of the hosts is absolutely terrified of zombies.
So, what's the plan? Bash him in the head, that seems to work out.
Now, accept the fact there is no escaping this horror. Death Holler brings back the dead. Remember, when you're in Death Holler, listener discretion is advised. With hospitality like this, you'll never want to leave. We hope you stay alive.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth.
Welcome back to Death Holler. I'm your host, Reverend Dr. Death, and joining me as always, my co-host, La Urena, who probably wants to sue me for trauma at this point in the season. Do I need to be looking out for a call from your lawyers, Urena?
Lucky for you, I don't have any lawyers. I'm pretty sure if I did, it'd probably be the devil's advocate. No, not at this time. I feel like I've been surviving. The horror comedies have been getting me through.
I'm just wondering how you're going to survive Return of the Living Dead, even though it's a horror comedy. It goes with a horror, but we'll get to that one on July 4th. So
as it stands, you cannot convince me that that's a horror comedy. And from what I remember, and it's been years, probably even decades since I've seen it.
Listen, it took me over 30 years to see the comedy in it, and even now I still kind of get dread watching it, so that's understandable.
Ay.
This episode, however, is a bonus one to make up for a slower May that we had, so we decided we would round out the Evil Dead coverage and review the pilot episode of Ash vs. the Evil Dead, as well as Evil Dead 2013, which is why I was asking about the trauma. Hopefully we won't get visited by deadites after all this reading of the Necronomicon.
After watching Ash versus the Evil Dead, it kind of looks like they get taken down a little bit easier. I have an idea of what needs to be done. You treat them like a zombie, but other Evil Dead movies, that is not so much the case.
Well, listen, that's because Ash is the chosen one.
That is true.
So he can take them out.
Okay. We're going with that.
It's in the show.
I know.
But first, if you're enjoying the podcast, we would appreciate it if you could take the time to like, comment, subscribe on whatever podcast platform you prefer. It helps us get more visibility on podcast listings and helps us grow. Also, consider following us on social media. You can find us on TikTok and Twitter under Death Holler Pod, and you can find us on Instagram and Facebook under Death Holler Podcast. We appreciate everyone who listens and hope you enjoy the show. Also, getting a heart emoji from Kelly Maroney on Facebook, that made my day. I'm just going to say, made my millennium, actually.
Did you scream like Ned Flanders? Were you like, ah?
Yeah, basically. That was me whenever I saw that.
Oh, my God. I was like, at first it took me a minute. I was like, why does that name sound familiar? And then I was like, oh, my God, no fucking way. And it was your birthday movie. So
exactly.
I was like, look at that. Night of the Comet, man. If you guys don't know Kelly Maroney, she liked one of our posts.
The post about the we're reviewing her movie, and I love it. I love it.
We also got some praise from, is it Icon Films?
Was it Ronin Flicks?
Ronin Films. I'm so sorry for not pronouncing that properly, but we got quite a good review. Well, I wouldn't say so much a review as a praise for one of our reviews for my birthday movie. Yes, we got some birthday gifts. We got some comments and some likes, and you know, it really makes our day since we're so fucking small. We're just the, you know, small fries out here in a big world of podcasts.
Yeah, just, I don't know. I wasn't anticipating anything like that. To get both the good review from Ronin Films and then, of course, getting the like from Kelly Maroney was awesome. So
yeah, I mean, there was that one time we did get a praise from the makers of Stalled.
Oh, that is true.
Yeah, so.
And let's not forget the time that we got a comment on YouTube talking about how dumb we were because we posted a video and they thought it was the actual movie and it fucking sucked because it was just a podcast.
Well, so Reverend, that's about 99% of our comments on YouTube, so.
I know.
So we can't single you guys out, so there.
Anyways, up first, we're covering Ash versus the Evil Dead. The episode that starts it all, El Jefe, directed by Sam Raimi, of course, written by Ivan Raimi, and Tom Spazili. I don't know how you say that. Music by Joseph Loduca again. He's back. They like to keep it within the same kind of family, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, you guys got a job for life together.
Principal players, of course, we've got Bruce Campbell back as playing Ashley Ash J. Williams, older, but definitely not wiser.
He's experienced, though.
I love the fact that they leaned into the fact that, I mean, and they knew it from the get-go, that Ash basically survives by luck, if nothing else. Like, dumb luck. They even say it in the series, and he's a complete himbo. Like, he can basically get any woman he wants, which is hilarious, but he's also, like, I mean, he's just dumb as a box of rocks. Like, there's no helping him. Like, it's funny combining the new series, you know, the two new movies and the female, you know, heroes in those movies versus the chosen one. It's like, I want to see the movie. I really do want to see the movie where they meet up because they're going to be so pissed. They're like, we had to give up so much just to live in here. And I mean, not that Ash didn't, but then like, and you have just Ash come in there the way that he is. And you know,
oopsies, you know?
Yeah. He's like, it's super easy to kill these fucking things. You know,
what are you talking about? why are you so stressed out? Are you on your period?
Just smoke a doobie and drink some, I wish I could. Pink Fuck, that was the name of it. It's in the second season of Ash vs. Evil Dead. Ted Raimi is his best buddy from his old, you know, town that he's from. And it's got ketamine in it.
Oh, my God. Isn't that, like, there's no, like, dosage usage information for ketamine? Am I thinking incorrectly? Or you don't really know how much you can safely give someone?
Basically, yeah, it's cat tranquilizer is what it is. And it's hilarious because they give it out to everybody. And it's just like, they even tell Kelly, which we'll get to in a second. They're like, here, have Pink Fuck. And she's like, I don't think I should. And Ash is like, live a little. We're all going to get killed by deadites anyways. And so she downs it and she's out, you know?
Oh my God.
But anyways, going back to Bruce, one that I'd forgot about and I was bringing up here, I actually enjoyed this, even though I didn't like the original show, that movie version of McHale's Navy. I don't know if you remember that when that came out in the like 90s or whatever, but it wasn't a bad redux of like an old TV show. They had like Kelsey Grammer in it and they, of course, Bruce Campbell. And a few different names, but it was actually funny. It was well done. So
I don't think I've seen it, but are we surprised?
No, not really.
No, I didn't think we were.
Ray Santiago plays Pablo Simon Bolivar. How would you say that?
Bolivar.
I'm going to defer to you.
Bolivar is how we would say Bolivar. Or Bolivar.
Okay. I'm just going to call him the cheerleader or the good sidekick, because that's literally what he is throughout the Now, this is a spoiler. He does turn into the Necronomicon at one point.
He actually turns into the book?
Yes, in a roundabout way.
Okay.
Yes.
I apparently have not seen that episode.
Well, it's a whole thing, because like the book has its face cut off. It begs and pleads for it not to happen. It, when the page is cut off, it flies and lands on Pablo's face. He starts puking up these demon creatures. It's a whole thing. So
cool.
And then whenever he comes back, because there is a scene where he, you know, gets killed. Actually, no, before he gets killed, he actually, the book's sent to hell, and all of a sudden he starts having this like intense like burning and stuff, and the pages start inscribing themselves on his flesh.
Ugh.
So yeah, he for all the times that Bruce or, you know, or Ash tries to get away from the Necronomicon, his best friend turns into it. So he's doomed to always have it near him.
He's a cheerleader. I feel like he's a bit of a hype man.
He is. He's the wingman for Ash, as if Ash even needs a wingman, because, I mean, Ash can this is skipping ahead. My favorite line in this is when he goes up to Kelly and he tells her, he's like, "You'll be thinking about me." He's sad. He said, "You would have been thinking about me." And she's like, "No way, old man." And then later, whenever he's killing the deadites, there's a moment where you can tell she got wet looking at him. And he's like, "You thought about it. I saw it."
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, she nods. I'm like, he gets all the women no matter what. So.
Oh, my God. It's a little far-fetched, I'm going to say, but okay.
It's funny. It just ties into the show. But Ray was in a Suburban Gothic, which we kind of covered that first season, I believe, of Death Holler. It's got that one skinny guy from Criminal Minds, I believe is what he was on.
Oh, I remember we talked about it. It's supposed to be like that American Gothic, but it's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. He's in that. I don't remember him, but he's in that. Okay. So we have Dana De Lorenzo playing Kelly Maxwell, and she is the hot one of the group, the hot female, goth, pseudo goth chick, yeah. I guess. You can say what you want to. Maybe her nose is a little bit big, but she's a pretty girl.
Yeah.
Really pretty. She was on the Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson, which is really weird to think about, but apparently she was like one of the, she did a bunch of sketches on that show. Okay. Like she would always come in and there was like some elephant or rhino or something. It was some animal that was always repeating and she did that on there.
Okay.
And then she was on the Mole Men of Belmont Avenue is another one that she did, was kind of related to horror.
Okay. Never heard of it, but all right.
I really like her in the show. She is almost a female Ash. Almost. I mean, she's not as dumb as him, but but she's as aggressive as he is, as far as like just not thinking and just like, let's kill the fucking thing. Like, or she gets that way. Not in the first episode.
Yeah.
But she gets there. Jill Marie Jones plays Amanda Fisher, the cop who needs answers.
Knew I recognized her. I knew she was from Sleepy Hollow.
She's from Sleepy Hollow. She's the main character from that. She was also in the Boo movie, the Madea movie.
Oh my God.
It's pretty funny for a Madea movie. But so
basically she plays the same character she played in Sleepy Hollow.
The exact same character.
And that is the only reason I recognized her. She's pretty. So, but I've not seen her in anything else other than Sleepy Hollow, but I'm like, man, this looks like that same character from Sleepy Hollow playing the same character from Sleepy Hollow, the TV series.
Ash actually woos her before she exits the series.
I figured he would. She's very pretty. So,
the thing about her is though, I'm going to say this up front. I feel like she's just a tag along, even through like most of her bigger episodes through season one. Like you've got the charisma that is the primary three, Bruce, you know, Ray and Dana. And then she comes in and you're like, oh yeah, she's here.
Yeah.
I mean, she's pretty, but like she doesn't hold a candle to
them. She's not a strong character, which kind of sucks. I did notice that in it, and I was like, I liked her. I thought she was kind of captivating in Sleepy Hollow. She was supposed to be a little bit weak because she's getting ready to be transferred.
Yes.
And so
She's good in that series, though. Yeah. She's really good.
And I was not getting that same. And this, granted, this is just one episode, but you've watched more. And I'm like, where does she belong in this?
They see, that's the thing, too. They bounce her back and forth because for a while they play her against Ruby, which we're going to get to in a second. They play her with her. And then whenever she finally gets on Ash's side, of course, you know, he woos her and all that stuff. But, like, then she kind of starts coming out of, you know, her shell a little bit, and she actually starts to become a character, and then they yank her. They get rid of her, and it's like, okay, you know.
Wow.
That was kind of a waste.
Yeah.
And the worst thing is that there is a version toward the end of the first season of Evil Ash, not the one from Army of Darkness, but a similar.
Yeah.
And he's the one that kills her. Because she thinks it's Ash, and this guy looks like Ash, but it's a duplicate that was made out of his. Actually, it's funny because it was made out of his dead hand.
I knew you were going to say that. Back.
Yeah, it comes back.
Oh boy, they put too much emphasis on his hand for us not to think that was going to happen.
Yeah, so a whole body grows out of that hand once they get back to the cabin, and when it grows into another evil Ash, it kills her, and then, you know, and then she becomes a deadite. She's kind of a cool deadite, but, you know, other than that, it's just like, okay, what purpose did she serve in the show other than one more person that Ash let down, like he couldn't save her.
That sucks.
That's it. And then we have Lucy Lawless playing Ruby Nobe, the sister to Annie, maybe, and looking for a Necronomicon. They set it up in the show that she's the sister, but then later it talks about how she wrote the Necronomicon, because so it means that she's an ancient Kandarian demon herself. Jesus. So did she just take on the form of Ruby Nobe?
Who's Annie, though?
The second movie, Evil Dead 2, the one that comes in with the pages that talk about the Chosen
One.
Oh,
yes, okay.
She's supposed to be her sister, but I think that's a lie. Like, I think she just said that because it actually reveals, and they go back in time in the second season of Ash vs. Evil Dead to the first Evil Dead movie, like right before Ash gets there with his friends.
Yes.
And Ash is going to destroy the Necronomicon and get rid of it before they can get there. But of course he forgets because he's a dumbass. He's like, well, if I didn't read from it, which is funny because he didn't read from it to begin with, which I think's 30 years of him baking his brain. But he says if he gets there and he doesn't read from it, if he gets rid of it in his past version, then none of that will happen. And when you get there, they're already attacked by the Evil Dead coming out of the woods. And he's like, they shouldn't be here. And then you're sitting there thinking, yeah, they should, dumbass. Because Professor Nobe has already read the fucking thing and recorded it on the damn tape.
I didn't even think about that. That took me a minute.
The best part is, though, is that he gets to fight Henrietta again from part two.
Oh, my God.
And they even make her look the same. Like,
oh, that's when she awesome.
Walks up, it's awesome. It's great. But anyways, of course, Lucy Lawless is Xena, Warrior Princess.
Who?
It's what...
Never heard of her or that.
She is hot as fuck in the series, though.
Wasn't she in, oh, God, what was that TV show? It was on Max. I want to say it was called Troy, but I'm not.
You might be right.
Hold on. Spartacus.
Spartacus. Okay, that makes sense.
Is what it was called. And, she was hot in that show, too, but she was definitely a cuck in that. She wasn't doing the cucking. She was being cucked.
Oh, okay. Well, she's a badass in this, and she's really hot, and it's kind of funny because, I mean, for anybody who grew up in the 90s, she's hotter now or in this series than she ever was as Xena.
I mean,
she really is.
Yeah, she was real hot in Spartacus, too.
And then we rounding out the cast, and I bring this up for our link to Evil Dead 2013, Cian Davis plays Vivian Johnson, Ash's old neighbor who becomes a deadite
in
this episode. And she plays the old witch woman at the beginning of Evil Dead 2013.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a link there, at least for the actresses.
That's kind of cool.
So synopsis. Many years after the events of Army of Darkness, that they don't officially reference, but they do. It does get brought up a few times in the show. The Deadite threat is gone, and Ashley J. Williams is just a man trying to get by and score one-night stands. When his most recent bar hookup causes him to see demonic visions, however, he realizes that perhaps he read from the Necronomicon while stoned, unleashing the evil once again.
It's funny how he realized it.
Yeah. He's like, why is this weed in here? And then he remembers what he did. Can Ash get his paycheck and get the hell out of town before the Deadites come calling? Will Pablo convince Ash to become the hero he was meant to be? And is Kelly's mom back from the dead? Spoiler alert on that. She's a Deadite. It's funny
how they play that. I can't even imagine.
It's funny how they play it too, because Ash literally punches her in the face. And she has convinced everybody, because she never changes, does anything, and everybody's all mad at Ash. And they're like, Kelly's like, get the fuck out of my, you know, parents' house. And then as soon as she says that, then the mom raises her head back, and she's a Deadite, and yeah. Ash was right the entire time, you know.
So she looked normal, and then?
She looked normal the entire time until he did that.
They can do that.
They can, and he knows, because he's the chosen one.
Yes, he's El Jefe.
Quotes from Ash. The other first thing I got to do is some cardio, because my heart's jackhammering like a quarterback on prom night.
Oh, my God, that was so funny.
Also, Ash, do me a favor, will you? Thank your mother for me. She passed the genes down to you in all the right places when he was talking to Kelly.
Oh, my God. Which she did, because did you see that silhouette? As she was entering the house?
Yeah.
Mom was rocking a hot bod, even after death.
And then, of course, Mr. Roper, who's the asshole that is Ash's supervisor at the discount store. Okay, look, you retard. And I can say retard because my gardener's a huge one. I know all about you. You think you can't get fired because you have seniority? Okay, technically you're correct, but it doesn't mean I have to help you. I love the fact that they play into, I mean, this was, I want to say this show
2015.
Aired before, yeah, it aired before we got woke stupid, but I love the fact they brought this up. I mean, you know, he's like, and I could say that word, and then he gives his reasoning why. It's like, no, you still can't say that word. You really can't say it.
It's, this show's from, this show, this season started in 2015, but it holds up so good that it just feels like it was just yesterday.
Yeah, they did really good on this entire series. They did. Like, it is one episode after the next, the amount of humor mixed with the actual, like, special effects, Deadites, all that. I mean, or even the horror sections. Because the first episode, I mean, we're going to kind of combine all these things we normally break down. That scene where, and that's the one good thing about having her in it, whenever Amanda Fisher, the cop, is with her partner going to the Stone Girls home. That plays up like almost the new movies, like type horror.
It does. Although I am confused why there was a dead person in that house, frozen in that. What's that? What's that scared face called? Remember from The Ring?
Oh, I don't even remember the name of it. But I know what you're talking about. Just that the death rictus or something like that.
Yeah. It had that face, but normally they turn into Deadites, which everyone else did in this.
Well, the best part in that whole episode, though, is where her partner, like, hops back. He gets, first of all, he gets killed like Linnea Quigley in Silent Night, Deadly Night.
He didn't look nearly as good.
No, you didn't have the tits hanging out. But then whenever he's there in front of her and he's like, when he's talking to her, they did that scene so well because he is so creepy. Mm-hmm. He's like, I want you. And then, you know, of course, and my wife even finished it before, just, you know, knowing what he was going to say, to die. And the grin on his face, like, they did really good in that scene.
I think they did good with the flashlight spinning around.
Yeah, that was really good. Well, just even, like, how dark it was inside that house while they were trying to, like, find the dead girl.
Oh, well, yeah, obviously. And then it gets darker because all the fucking windows shut. And it's like, really? Is there somebody else? And then it's like, oh, no, not the fucking cop. that was a scary scene.
It was. And the best part about that scene is that whenever you finally get through all that and you go back to Ash after, even though, you know, that character, you know, I'm going to have to scroll back here because I keep forgetting her name because she's not that memorable, Amanda. Mm-hmm. When she kills the Deadites, I mean, barely, that's in that house and escapes, when it goes back to Ash and you know you're safe because anytime it's around him, it's just goofy.
Yeah.
That's how good the show is, because it's like you're comforted by the fact you're back with Ash. It's the, you know, like it's like, okay, yeah. Things are fine now because
we're with, you know, Daddy.
We're back with Ashy Slashy again, yeah. You know?
Slashy Ashy. There was one more quote, actually, you forgot, and that was Groovy.
Well, yes, he does say that.
Which is so dumb.
Well, and also I wanted to, first of all, going through the episode, what did you think about how they started up to where, like, it looks, I love this part of the scene too, where he's inside the trailer and he's cinching up like his little leather, you know, like stuff and all that stuff. And you think he's getting ready to like go out and kick some dead-eyed ass. And he's literally putting on a corset to suck in his fat gut so he can go on a date. What'd you think about that?
I thought that was actually hilarious and genius.
It's perfect for
him. He's in a trailer, which is, oh my God, it was. And you could tell they're like in a small town.
Yes. And he goes to the one bar, and the scene, my favorite part of that whole scene, well, there's tons of it, but he's sitting there and he starts telling the story about how he lost his hand. And of course he don't have the metal hand anymore. He's got this little shitty wooden one. And he's like, that day that I saved that poor boy's life on the railroad track. And then the woman's like, oh my God. And like, he uses his himbo skills to get her in the bathroom. She turns into a fucking deadeye.
Yeah.
He gets freaked out and he starts leaving. She's like, you're not going to finish. And he's like, yeah, but it's got to be quick. And even after all that, he still fucks her. I'm like,
I'm not surprised.
That's Ash.
Not surprised at all. Yeah. And of course me, I'm going to catch these things and I'm going to point them out. I am so sorry that I'm not sorry to the listeners right now, but I could totally see her. She had on the beige or the nude colored,
yeah,
not even a thong. Put a nude thong on her. She had nude shorts on.
I was getting ready to say, these almost granny panties. Yes. Or something.
And it was so funny. And I was like, you couldn't go. I know that it's not supposed to be that sexual, but come on, you got a guy slamming, allegedly naked against her, slapping her ass. At least give her the nude thong.
That would have been something, yeah.
Yeah, like give her a Barbie crack, you know?
One thing I was going to point out that I find interesting is a link between this and the 2013, which came before this remake slash reimagining, is that Mia in that movie, whenever she is starting to become possessed, sees a dead-eyed version of herself as a vision. She keeps seeing that before she ever gets possessed. It's funny that they kind of play into that a little bit with Ash, because he keeps seeing visions of deadites, yes. Even though, I mean, you know, he doesn't become one. He's already been one once. But it's like anybody who's destined to be kind of like, you know, somebody who's going to survive the deadites, they've almost linked this vision stuff to at this point a little bit. Which I thought was interesting. I don't remember if Beth in the new one has that. I don't think she did have visions, but I could be wrong.
No, it happened really fast with her.
Yeah, basically everybody in her family immediately turned or went pretty quick. Now,
you know what, though? If I were a deadite, I would want my children to be with me. I would. They're not going to be safe. And I would rather be the one that deadited them.
You would want to be the one that turned them.
Yeah, because, like, no one's going to love them like I'm going to. I don't want another deadite deaditing them.
So okay, so when your soul is burning in hell,
yes.
Or being, you know, whatever happens to them, mm-hmm. You want your children to be right there with you as you're being tortured. I gotcha.
Well, at least I can protect them in hell. Okay. They don't have to go through the torture. It could be me. But what I'm saying is they're not safe if other deadites are going to get loose. They're going to end up there anyways. Might as well be with their mommy.
Fair point.
See? I've got motherly instincts.
I mean, I'm thinking Professor Nobi and how he basically asked his daughter to free his soul from hell and to save herself. But, you know, that's cool, too. That works.
You make a point. I, whether it's a good or one or not, I will neither confirm nor deny.
As far as like, now, what did you think about the fact that he no longer works at S-Mart, that he works at like some
Value Mart
or whatever it's called, very discount.
I didn't like it. I'm not a fan because I really thought that he was at S-Mart. I guess maybe I just related that he was working at some fucking Mart place, you know? Do we know, is there anything in the trivia why it's not S-Mart anymore?
I don't think there is. The only thing I can think of is that S-Mart was in the Universal movie and they didn't have rights to that, so they had to make it something else.
That makes sense. What do you think S-Mart stood for? Was that just like Sam Raimi throwing in his S from his name, or
it's literally because of the rhyme that they made. Shop smart, shop S-Mart, you know. S-Mart smart, you know.
Okay. That but, makes sense.
But him, like, that scene in there where he's, like, told by that Roper guy right after he's, you know, had that whole discussion about how he can't. First of all, he tries to use his his lizard Eli, or whatever his name is,
to
try to get out of, like, or to get out of work. And the guy's like, that's your fucking lizard, isn't it? And he's like, yeah. But, like, after he has that scene with him, the guy tells him to take, like, the bulbs out back.
Oh, yeah.
He breaks every single one of them.
He literally just keeps dropping them. My favorite part was when he shoved them underneath the...
The pallets.
Yeah, the pallets.
They're underneath that.
I was like, just put them in there. And did Philips sponsor them? Because those were Philips bulbs.
I noticed that. Yeah, I don't know if they paid for that or not.
That's hella funny.
But Pablo, being the great guy that he is and the great friend that he is, just immediately come in there to help to save Ash's ass. And he's like, okay, I'll take care of it, Jefe. You go do what you got to do, you know.
Yeah, I didn't understand. I was like, look at this nerd, you know. But it did. It helped segue to where Ash needs to go, where he needs to drop more bulbs.
And get attacked by the little doll from hell.
That was something.
I was going to ask you what you thought about the doll scene. It's very out there for the Evil Dead universe. I mean, now they do bring a puppet of Ash later into the show, but that makes a little bit more sense than the doll does, because I don't understand when the doll gets animated, why it has teeth.
Well, because it's evil. I guess I would understand
but
that.
But it also has guts, too, because when Pablo smashes it, it bleeds.
So it goes real off the cuff. The puppet makes sense because we had little tiny Ashes in Army of Darkness, and those looked very claymation-y.
Yes, they did.
So, you know, that makes sense. It's not too off the rocker for Evil Dead, but it wasn't my favorite, so I'll say that.
It was a little weird, but... I mean, it gives Pablo a nice intro as far as, like, there's weird shit out there and Ash isn't just making this up.
Yeah.
You know? And then you have the scene where Kelly, you know, shows up. Pablo says, my friend works here. And then he says that she haunts my dreams. I like that.
Oh, yeah.
And Ash admits, he's like, yeah, she's fucking, she's a looker. And then he goes over there and hits on her, basically. They do a pretty good job of making her a little bit more modern in the sense that she kicks back on him real quick.
Yeah.
She's like, you want me to take your other hand? And he's like, what, you mean take the wooden hand away from me? And she's like, no, your good hand, dumbass.
Yeah.
You know?
Kelly takes no shit, but she gives a lot of it.
And then they leave from there. Mr. Roper gets attacked when Kelly and Pablo leave on their motorcycle after Ash has left a good long time before that. Mr. Roper gets like hit by one of the deadites and comes back later, you know,
yeah.
It's been a problem. But then like, I think it's funny, like the best part of the episode is whenever they're all in Ash's trailer at the end of it though.
And they start getting attacked.
Yeah, they all get attacked. The old lady's there.
That was like, perfect.
That was a good scene. She's just right where his chainsaw's at, right where he needs to go.
Which we didn't see a silhouette of her, so that's funny, but it is what it is.
She's creepy fucking deadite, though.
Yeah, I was. You know what? I like that we didn't see her silhouette because you didn't expect to see her there.
And the fact that Ash is still outlining his tools.
Thank you. Like, I'm so glad you said that. The axe. That was like the best part. I was like, are we for fucking real right now?
Well, the chainsaw has one around it too, whenever he finally removes it.
Yeah. Well, obviously, it did in the not third, second?
The second movie.
Second one, yeah. Oh my God. I was dying when I saw it. I was like, you gotta be fucking kidding me.
They actually stab Pablo, though. I was surprised on that. Like, he gets pretty good stab in that first episode.
Which is, he can't pull it out while he's trying to save Kelly, but he can pull it out when everything's good. You'd think the adrenaline would be there in the middle of everything, you know?
Yeah, well, you gotta, but the person to save her has to be Ash. I mean, it just
has
to be.
That is true. Okay.
Now, they did a pretty good job with having the evil hag, like, extending her fingernail out.
Yes.
It gets real close to Kelly's eye. And then, of course, Ash, you know, says, I wish I could remember the line, but he's basically like, hey, you know, hag or whatever he says. And then she stops and then looks around and then, you know, he's ready to for action.
Yeah.
Now, I know you brought this up offline. What did you think about the scene where, once again, in imitation of what he did in Army of Darkness, where he jumps up, it's a weird scene too, because the way he jumps off the bed and the way that jumps outward to attach the chainsaw and the way that he lands makes no sense in the flow of the scene.
He did the Superman.
Because he flies forward like Superman, but then when he goes to land, there's no flip or anything to correct it or anything. He basically is fully upright whenever he lands on his feet, and it's like you couldn't be because you were doing a Superman move.
You know, I'm not even going to question it at this point. I'm not even going to, I'm not even going to discuss how the mechanics of that wouldn't work, because we're talking about an old man flying to connect a chainsaw to his hand mid-air. So
you're saying I should leave logic out of this, is what you're saying.
We're not bringing logic into this conversation, is what we're not doing.
I'm not nitpicking it. I find it funny every time I watch it, I'm like, he wouldn't even close that position. It's just so hilarious.
Okay, now, I thought in my head when I saw that, it would have been hilarious to see him belly flop.
That would have been
fun. Yeah.
Well, the funny thing is, if you watch the series more, keep watching it, he does that chainsaw connect like three or four more times. God. It gets a little old, but then right whenever you're about to eye roll at it, kind of like we discussed about a modern meme that's going around, I'm not mentioning it, but when you're about to eye roll at it for the fourth time that he's done it in the series, the chainsaw misses because he gets distracted at the last second by Deadeye. It hits him in the head, and then he falls on the ground.
Oh, shit.
I'm like, okay, that saved it, because it was getting a little old, and this time it actually went a different way.
Yeah, and seeing that, I'll take that. I think they knew they were probably, overdoing it, and that's probably why they did that.
Well, the thing is it probably wouldn't have been that bad when you that's the thing we got to discuss with this, too. When you're watching this series and you're watching it week to week or however this aired, you don't notice this stuff as often. It's when you're binge watching it that you see the stuff like that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like back to back to back. And it makes it even worse when you're watching seasons back to back to back, like I've been doing, because like the fact that he does it a couple times in the first season and then he does it a couple times in the second season wouldn't have been that bad if you'd had like a year or two separation. You would have kind of forgot.
Yeah.
But when you watch them all together, you're like, oh my God, this is the fourth time they're doing this. It's just because you're binge watching. It's the reason.
That's true. I guess in increments like we used to watch back in the day, it wouldn't be as bad. It'd be like, yeah, do it, Ash, you know?
But having said that, they don't repeat the same things all the time for everything. Now, you could say that the way they kill the Deadites and the, you know, being covered in vomit, blood, black, green, whatever goo, but that's just Evil Dead.
Yeah.
That's what happens in all of it anyway. So if you don't like seeing that repeatedly happen on every episode, it ain't the series for you, because you're going to get that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that we know that when we're watching Evil Dead, we're definitely going to get that. It just, I don't mean to sound like a broken record here, but so imagine just there's three seasons of this, and how many episodes are in every season?
I want to say about 8, give or take, maybe 10, but 8,
okay.
I think, is about what they have.
Which we kind of discussed. I like 8 as a number in a season. Noah said that's almost too much. He thinks 6 is a better number. I don't like that. I think that's too short. I don't care if there's filler episodes or not.
Well, you don't, even with 8 episodes, depending upon the length of the show, mm-hmm. you don't need filler episodes. Mm-hmm. And I want to say this one does have 10, but even with that, they don't really have filler. They have a continuous story.
They keep it going. Yeah. So I just remember that being, you know, my husband hates filler episodes. I say killer fillers is what we'll call them. It kills the mood.
Well, they will kill you yes. after a while. The Supernatural was notoriously bad for them.
Yeah. Like, okay, guys, we're going on episode 4. 4 or 5 is going to be the filler episode, you know?
Well, but when you have 22 to 24 episodes, they're an hour long each. You're going to have a lot of filler episodes. You just have to. I mean, because you don't have the luxury of, you know, like, we want to talk about Yellow-Eyed Demon. Okay, well, you know, so how many episodes you got for that? Well, really, our good storyline's about 10. Well, you got 14 more episodes.
Yeah.
Figure something out, you know.
Throwing a dog or something. I don't know.
I mean, at a certain point, you just have to accept it, but.
But yeah, when you got like 8 to 10 episodes, you better fucking buckle up. It's going to get grimy. It's going to get grody.
Well, the funny thing is, though, is that like, and I know we brought it up several times this season, but Disney's Acolyte, it only has like 8 episodes in the season or the series total. They've 2 of those episodes have been filler so far out of 8.
Yeah.
Like, that's stupid. I mean, like, if you can't figure out how to make 8 episodes like a continuous story, there's no help for you. Or don't make 8 episodes. Just make the ones that fit the storyline.
It's such a horrible example because I'm hearing that everything about that is horrible. I've not heard one person not even stick up for it yet and be like, guys, this is actually good.
There's internet shills, but they know if they don't review it positively, then Disney will remove their access. So, I mean, we don't get access from Disney, so yeah, we're going to thrash on them.
Why? Because fuck them. That's why.
That's why. But this show's really good, so it's a totally different situation.
Yeah. You'll never see Ash versus Evil Dead on Disney, at Disneyland. Would be exciting to see at Universal, though.
Now, it would be. The one thing I didn't like at the end of this episode, but I get why they did it, and they do correct it immediately in the second episode, well, in a roundabout way, it's Pablo lying is why it's resolved. I don't like the fact that Ash completely, like, ignored Kelly and was just like, I just got to get rid of this book, like, that's going to save everybody. But if you watch the episode, it wasn't because Ash was being a total ass and ignoring. He doesn't realize her mom is back from the dead.
I figured that immediately because he was like, she never said it.
She never said it, and he thinks that it's just like, I'm worried about my mom. And he's like, well, everybody's mom's in trouble, and but the thing is, he kept cutting her off, so she couldn't explain. It's like, no, my mom was dead, and now she ain't, you know, one of those things.
Yeah. No, he wasn't. I mean, she said it to Pablo. I don't know if she felt like she didn't have to say it to Ash. I don't know.
And another thing is Pablo didn't make any better because he wasn't stepping in and trying to explain to Ash, you know, hey, you're not listening, Jefe, you know, it's this. But it kind of stinks, but in the second episode, the way that it starts up, he basically, when Kelly leaves, he hides the Necronomicon, Pablo does, and says that Kelly took it with her. So Ash has to go to her house.
That makes it work, yeah.
Yeah, that's how he gets him to go there.
Okay.
And then, of course,
I need to continue. Even I've seen this, like, I watched this with Noah, but apparently there's so many details I missed because, well, I mean, I watched it kind of on the sidelines, you know?
The thing I do like, though, in the second episode that redeems it is that Ash is not, you know, just, I mean, he does have a heart because when he goes to Kelly's house, and spoiler alert, Kelly's mom and her dad, her mom's already dead and a deadite. But when her dad gets killed by her mom, and then Ash has to kill the deadite, and he buries him, which is funny, too, because there's a scene there, classic Ash. He does the, you know, the stick crosses that he did for Linda. She's like, my family was Jewish.
Oh,
and he's like, well, why didn't you tell me before I built the crosses? He gets all mad at her for a second. He's like, you watched me build those things. Why couldn't you told me?
He couldn't tell by the nose.
You know,
but she totally has a Jewish nose.
But anyways, like he when he sees that she's lost everybody like he did, and sees that she's got a resolve to go and kick, you know, Evil's ass now, that's when he bonds with her. He's like, okay, we've been through the same thing. So he gets cool with it, you know, or with her real quick after that episode.
She knows a thing or two because she's seen a thing or two.
Bum, 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 da, 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 da. Speaking of, like, so what do you think overall of the story? Was it a good pilot episode? So we'll frame it this way. If you'd have saw this, would you be like, fuck yeah, green light, you know, seven more episodes of this or whatever, after seeing this first episode?
Yeah, because let me tell you, watching this episode, for me, this is going to be a spoiler alert, but not so much on what my rating is, but like, this episode made me not want to continue watching it. Not because it's not amazing. It is. It's just, it was scary enough that I was like, fuck, man. I was not mentally prepared for it, because I've seen the episodes with my husband. I don't think I watched this episode. I think I kind of slept watched it a little bit with him, and then got into it after like maybe episode three or more, and then kind of as he continued the series. So if that's any indication, yeah, I would have absolutely green-lighted it.
Considering the fact that me and my wife have rewatched all the way back through the set after watching this, rewatched all the way through the second season and starting the third, fuck yeah, I would have greenlit the rest of the season.
I think my husband has watched this like two or three times minimum. Each, like the whole thing, all three seasons.
I mean, going back to the visuals, they do a damn good job with the deadites in this.
Like, oh my God, the props, even when the old lady fucking falls over and you know it's just a fucking dummy doll, everything looks so good.
The gore in it is top tier level. Like, it's better than anything that Raimi ever did in the movies, including Army of Darkness.
I mean, how they projected what was happening in Ashes when he was going back and telling his story. And they projected it on the walls. And the reason I bring that up is that Universal Studios in Hollywood, and they probably have this in Orlando too, but if you go and you see whatever movie they have showing at the time, they have this theater where every fucking part of the theater, except for the chairs, and I'm not even 100% sure about the chairs, every part of the movie theater is a screen. It turns into part of the film. So it feels like you're in a boat. We were watching, it was Kung Fu Panda, I think is what it was. Okay. And all of a sudden you're surrounded by water, and the seats are moving and everything. So it's like being in those D-Box seats, except the entire, everything, 360. It looks like regular wooden fucking movie theater, like an old ancient movie theater, but then it just all turns into a movie screen or something. I don't know how they did that, but when I watched this, that's what reminded me of it, and I was like, that looks really good.
One thing about that scene, and that sounds awesome. I've not actually seen anything like that. That scene combines both one and two, and it fixes the continuity by doing it, because it shows Cheryl, Linda, Scott, and Ash from the original movie.
Yes.
But then whenever they show Linda, the deadite puppet Linda that dances,
yes,
from the second movie, binding them together finally and erasing that, oh, it's different universes. No, they're the same. They patched it together.
I was thinking that.
And the great thing is, when you watch through the second season, when Ash goes back to his hometown, he keeps avoiding Cheryl's room because the fact that, you know, the memories of what happened.
Yeah.
Cheryl comes back as a deadite. And the actress who played Cheryl in the first movie,
oh, hell,
comes,
yeah, back
and has the same look she did as the deadite underneath the trap door. It's great.
That's, like, that's hella cool. Yeah, you did mention that too, but I did not see that episode. So,
and the better thing is they have Lee Majors as Ash's dad, and he acts just like Ash, which is hilarious. But when they have a final bonding moment together, he tells Ash that it was because of the fact that he took Cheryl away from him, and, you know, he thought that he killed Cheryl was the reason that he no longer had anything to do with Ash. That's the reason they fell apart. And it's actually a really good, like, retcon/fix for, or emotional fix for the series, because you never once think after Army of Darkness, like, how did Ash deal with his family after, you know, basically killing his sister?
Yeah.
You know, in that movie. And it was a good tie back to kind of, you know, wrap that up.
Man, Cheryl held up pretty good. Or the actress that played her, I should say.
She looks pretty much the same. I mean, in the series. And the funny thing is they make Ted Raimi, there's a hint in the show, even though he's Ash's best friend, that he had something for Cheryl and that he might've hooked up with Cheryl once upon a time, because when the Deadite Cheryl comes back is whenever Ash hears something upstairs, he goes in there and it's his friend played by Ted Raimi, basically jerking off to Cheryl's face in an old picture that's in her room.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I'm like, that's classic Army of Dark, well, Evil Dead, I should say. So to bring that up that way.
That's so funny.
But I'm glad you brought that up about, because that was one thing I was going to mention, is that they did a good job patching one and two together. Yes. In that one scene. And they reference Army of Darkness in ways when they can, because when he goes back into the past in the second season, he even says it. He's like, well, I've already been to the past. I went to the medieval times or whatever. And it's like, okay, you said it.
Okay, so Grandpa.
It's canon, you know.
Okay, Grandpa, let's get you back to bed.
What'd you think about the acting? My favorite part, I really think that the actors who played Pablo and Kelly immediately right out the gate were just amazing, because you care about them and you want to follow them.
So the pilot episode, they were okay. They really, really, and you'll agree with me, they really shine in the further episodes.
Oh, they definitely come into their own in the fart. But I'm just saying, they get your attention enough in the first episode. It's like, okay, I don't hate the fact that Bruce now has somebody else to work with.
Yeah, yeah, because normally we would want Bruce on his own. But no, these people are likable enough that you're like, okay, you can come along. You can sit next to us.
And they don't have her in the episode, but Lucy Lawless really, at least in one, as one incarnation of Ruby, the one that comes to respect Ash, she's really, really good too. Like, she's a good addition to the show.
Yeah, definitely. She's always so poised in everything she plays. She's just got a way about her, you know?
Something I didn't know was she's always got like that ancient Greek warrior,
yes,
you know, mode to her. One thing I didn't remember was at the end of the first season, and I know we're kind of including that stuff, but hey, it's our show. We can do what we want with it. Samara Weaving plays just a regular girl who is with a couple of friends who are camping near the famous cabin whenever all the shit starts to go down. And it just struck me as so weird that Samara Weaving was in this, you know, the girl from Ready or Not.
Oh, I know, I know. How I cannot forget Samara Weaving. She's gorgeous.
But she's got a lot of scenes where, like, you think that she might make it. Spoiler alert, she don't. But, like, she's doing her Scream Queen thing. That scream that she does that I gave her benefits for during, like, you know, being so original, that's just her, because she's doing it in Ash vs. the Evil Dead. And it's just like a really, really out there scream.
Yeah.
It doesn't, like, it modulates as she's screaming. It's just really weird in a good way.
Yeah.
But it's just odd that they had her. I'm just like, that's a pretty big name for and now granted she's in two episodes back to back, but for somebody just to kill off,
yeah,
I'm like, that's pretty big.
Yeah. They probably can afford to keep her as long though.
Now that might be part of it. So, we mentioned her before, but the black cop, like, I mean, did you think her acting was pretty good in this set? And that one scene with the other cop, I think she did really good, but she's not really utilized after that, I don't feel like.
It's sad. No, she was not. There was nothing about her storyline that was like, I need to see more of her. When she showed up back on screen at the cafe, even when the scene with the little girl, she kind of sees and what she saw, and then fucking Xena's like, well, you saw exactly what your eyes saw, you know, whatever. That's not the exact quote, but, you know, she's like, sometimes what you see is exactly what you think you saw, you know, or whatever. I was like, oh, fuck, I had forgotten about her. And then she goes back to the house, and it's like, oh, his shirt. Yeah, this really did happen. So I get it. She was questioning whether or not it happened. Like, I, too, I wouldn't want to go back to the house by myself. Why would she think it didn't happen? Where did her partner go if it didn't happen?
I think they hint in the episode, because I've watched it. I watched it a couple times for this. They hint that the other cops like almost gaslit her. It's like, sure, you saw your dead partner. Sure, this happened. And they had her go to the psych doctor for, you know, the police when they have trauma. And basically she was told that she experienced too much trauma in her brain and invented all that is what it was.
Yeah, I guess maybe if they explained a little bit more, like, how he allegedly died, if she didn't see him die the way she did, quotation mark, I know that would take too much of it, but her story was not compelling. There wasn't enough. The scene she was in was fucking amazing. It was, to me, the best horror we were going to get out of that episode. Because yes. Ash is the comic relief. She was the horror. So we needed her and her partner. But after that, they just didn't make it. They didn't follow through enough to make me, like I said, she popped up and I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about her. Okay, go on. What's happening? Oh.
It's even worse when they bring her back in later episodes, because most of the time she's just a foil to Ash. Like, she'll show up, she'll cuff him, she'll do something to fuck him up whenever he's trying to kill a deadite.
Like she was like, in fucking Sleepy Hollow.
Basically, yeah.
Oh my God.
And it actually hurts her character a little bit, because she's the quote unquote fun police to go back to Club Dread.
Oh shit.
She's like, no, when she shows up, you're like, oh God, here she goes again. She's going to fucking, you know, cause Ash to mess up something whenever he's really getting in the groove of things. And she does. And you know, it just goes, when you see her, it's more like an eye roll. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
They eventually redeem her, but it's not worth it by the end. Like, she's not, when she gets redeemed is right before they take her away.
It sucks, because I really feel like they could have done something a little bit more with her partner, but I think they had to focus on Callie, you know, Callie's character. Yeah, so
lot of world building with her in the first season.
There was not enough room for these two people. I don't know how they would have. I think if they had just maybe had the cop explain to Ash what happened, and I don't know how great it is that she foiled him when she foiled him. You said it kind of hurts her character, but I feel like she could have been like almost like the red herring, you know, to be like, or not even so much the red herring, but like she could have been the doom prophet, to be like, hey, I saw this, and this is what I saw. And Ash kind of like, yeah, well, whatever. But him know in the back of his mind, she fucking probably really did see that, you know? And left it at that, because I feel like it was a waste of a character.
It ends up being that way, unfortunately. And I don't know if they had other things planned for her, and maybe her schedule didn't allow for it. Because when did Sleepy Hollow actually come out? Because it was around this time, wasn't it?
Yeah, hold on one second. I'm pulling it up right now. Oops, I'm just typing in 2015. Sleepy Hollow drama series, and that was 2013, and it was for 4 seasons, so it was while this was happening.
So they probably shouldn't even bothered with getting her, period, because they were working against Sleepy Hollow's schedule, and that might have been the reason they were like, listen, we can't, it's been hard to, like, you know, get her in and make sure that she's taken care of and all that, so we're just gonna have to write her out of the show. Like, that's probably what they did, because I've seen other shows do that. I don't think there's any trivia that says that, but if that was the case, then they would have probably been better with a different actress, or, you know, all together, just so that they, if they were planning on a different storyline for her, then going that route. I mean, now granted, seeing another person get killed, you know, while under Ash's watch and how it affects him, Bruce really does a good job playing off of that. But I don't know that it was necessarily worth it for every other scene that she's in, you know, in the show.
Okay, so I have some update. So Jill Marie Jones was in Sleepy Hollow, but I don't know what she played, because she wasn't the cop in Sleepy Hollow.
Okay, so she was a sister then.
Because
she was the crazy sister that had like the visions, I think, in it literally or something that she had.
Yeah, because it's weird because I really thought it was the same girl, and they don't look like each other, so I don't want to come off, you know. I guess they kind of do.
They look a little bit alike because they do play sisters, but the thing is, I think both, I don't know for you, but it's been a bit since I watched Sleepy Hollow, so I mean,
it's been a couple of years for me.
I couldn't really remember who the main actress was. I mean, you know, that's because the Ichabod was the main character to me, him,
yeah,
and then that one creepy guy who ended up being like the... he ended up like having something to do with the horseman or whatever, the one that was on Fringe. I can't remember his name. It's John something or other, but they were the ones that stood out in my mind as far as actors. And of course, Clancy Brown, but Clancy Brown's only in it for like two episodes, if that. So,
yeah. No, but yeah, going back to Jill Marie Jones, who played Amanda in Ash versus the Evil Dead, she plays the exact same character of the second lead of Sleepy Hollow. So
yes, she plays what her sister would have been in that show.
Identical, except for her sister was a little bit more gung-ho. And now I'm like, was that the actress that made it seem that way now? Or was it the directing and the writing? Who's to say?
It might have been. It's a, you know, it all works together. But she was the weakest link as far as just like returning characters in the first season. Like she really, I mean, when they bring in Ted Raimi, just because of how animated he is in the second season, like every time that he's on screen is a joy, but it's Ted Raimi. That's different, you know?
And exactly.
Of course his brother and Bruce are always going to write better parts for him anyways. That's how it goes.
Must be nice. What's it like to be the favorite, you know?
But Lee Majors as Ash's dad was great in the second season too, even though he wasn't in it as much.
Yeah.
They did a real good job of like, he's, if you think that Bruce or Ash is comic relief, his dad is like the next step up. Imagine somebody even older that's just as like forthright with like, you're going to fuck me before the night is over with, you know, that type of thing.
Oh boy.
What did you think about the music? It matches the series, I mean, or the movies.
Yeah, I definitely like the song at the end. You and I discussed that already. So during the credits, closing credits, there's a pretty cool 70s song playing. Actually, the song at the beginning, the rock song that was playing, was actually pretty cool too.
And wasn't there a rock song? There was some kind of song like that whenever he's smoking dope with the one chick and reading from the Necronomicon, but I can't remember what it was.
That one doesn't stand out as much. And I would say everything else, like, you know, during the scary scenes and stuff like that, whatever, LaDuca,
LoDuca or something like that.
Yeah, his music, absolutely appropriate, but he knows what he's doing at this point.
Yeah, it's old hat to him at this point. Yeah. He knows how to frame the scenes and how to the little intros and outros and all that.
It works very well together. Nothing stood out as inappropriate, meaning it didn't belong there, or you know, no happy circus music when something scary is happening. I know that does kind of happen intentionally here and there during this season because there's, you know, comedy going on. But yeah, for this first episode, they kept it nice and tight. So.
Just like I was gonna say just like Kelly, but there's a line that Ash always uses and they bring it up a bunch of times in the second season. That's how she even knows it's Ash. Actually his dad even says it at one point, and it's the same exact line, which makes it hilarious. It's something like she's fine but she's feral or something like that.
Fine but feral.
Fine and feral, or it's two F's, and I know one of them's fine. And like, it's funny when his dad says it too, and it's just like, and she even repeats it back to him. She's like, "Yes, I'm fine and whatever." I just love the fact she goes with it at a certain point. She's like, "You're sexualizing me, but I'm okay with it because you're also saying I'm a badass." So, and I got to give credit to that actress because she could, I mean, given how today things go, you know, she could have been a complete turd about how, like, her character was written in the show.
She's filthy and fine.
Filthy and fine, that's how it was. That's exactly it.
Oh, my God.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, she could have been a total, like, harpy about how they, but, like, she just rolled with it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and just, like, the character, you know, is a badass. And yes, she's good looking, and that's part of her too, which is, you know, I'm glad this was made when it was. I don't know how it probably wouldn't get made today. Sad.
Yeah. I wonder if the actors are, well, I know Bruce is always, it is what it is to him, but I wonder if the other actors are like, yeah, this was awesome. I'm glad I got to be a part of that. I hope they feel that way. Or if they're just like, ooh, I can't believe we used the R word or, you know, whatever.
I can imagine that the guy who plays Pablo is probably cool as shit with this, but I don't know about Kelly. Could go either way, but she worked with Craig Ferguson, and he did that kind of stuff all the time on his show.
Yeah.
That, you know, like that pseudo, like risky, like I'm being kind of misogynistic, kind of sexualizing the woman, but she's cool with it and it's all for a joke. So
hopefully
fine. Yeah. So she dealt with him for years, and she was kind of used to that anyways.
Bitch, you got to work on a set with Lucy Lawless and fucking Bruce Campbell. Like, you better be grateful. And not only that, Sam Raimi. Like, yeah. I have not heard anything of her complaining, so I hope that's not a thing. But like,
I don't think I've not heard that she has complained. I'm just saying that, you know.
Oh, like, no, I know. Yeah.
You know, if you would have cast, like, God almighty, Brie Larson.
Oh, Lord.
To play Kelly, you would have never heard the end of it. You know, she'd been off camera. I am totally the sexual object for this old white male, you know, and it's like, shut the fuck up. All right, trivia. The American flag in front of the store has 48 stars.
Was that an accident?
I don't think it was, and I just that goes to show you how value they were.
Oh my God.
This is the first episode to be directed by the creator of The Evil Dead himself, Sam Raimi.
Woohoo.
Books from Beyond's address is 1973 Olds Road. Ash's car is a 1973 Oldsmobile. The same car is in Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness. So there you go.
What did he drive in this episode? Do we know?
It's the same one.
It's the same one?
I want to say it's Raimi's car because he puts it in everything.
Yeah.
They even have an episode later in the second season where the car gets possessed and it becomes Christine. It is great.
Hell yeah.
Because Ash is like, he's so hurt over it. He's like, they took Linda. They took my hand. Now they've taken my car, you know.
I'm surprised he doesn't call it baby.
The title of the episode, El Jefe, translates to the chief or the boss. So oh, okay. You go.
Yes. Yeah. I am aware.
Well, I know you are, but, you know, there are some of us who don't speak the, you know, Espanol. So.
Speak the Mexican.
The episode closes with Ash's famous quote, groovy, which is what you brought up. Mm-hmm. And the song playing in this episode's credits is Journey to the Center of the Mind by the Amboy Dukes.
Featuring Ted Nugent.
All right, final thoughts. What did you think about the pilot episode?
Oh, man, this thing was awesome. Like, the fact that it had me on edge. I was expecting just the humor because I had seen most of the comedic stuff, you know, watching with my hubby, and a lot of eye rolls, but I think that the amount of fear they put into the scene of them going into that house was awesome. It was very much a chef's kiss. So, and watching it, me saying, I don't think I want to continue watching this, that's a good thing. When I say I'm not going to watch a movie, majority of the time it's because in this podcast, because these are scary films, majority of the time it's not because it's stupid. It's actually because it was so good, it was scary. So that's a compliment.
Thing.
Yes, that is a compliment. Yeah. And all my praises to this episode because it was good. Very Evil Dead. You can't get more Evil Dead than this.
Do you want to give it a rating or you just want to leave it at that? I'm fine either way.
Let's give it a rating. I'm going to give it, oh God, it's so close to a 5. It's a 4.7 for me.
I will say that it is, I was going to give it a little bit lower, but like, you're right. I mean, just that intro scene perfectly brings Ash back into this, you know, universe. I mean, him cinching up and then it's basically a girdle to suck in his gut so he can go out on the day.
Yeah. it's such an ancient ass girdle too.
Yeah. So 4.8, 4.9, somewhere in that range. The only bad thing is it's not as smart, but it's not their fault. They couldn't get the rights to that.
That's so funny.
But again, it it was so fun to watch this that I was just like, okay, I'm watching the rest of the series again for the second time.
I was thoroughly impressed. It was like, how are they gonna? It's the kind of series that Noah's always talking about. Oh, if we just take Resident Evil and we break it up, the game into, this is what he meant, because they took Evil Dead as a world, if you will, and they were able to compress it into episodes and make them good episodes and have no fillers. It's insane to think that, because of all the failures we've seen in terms of, well, there is a Resident Evil that did horrible on Netflix, and there's other storylines that we've talked about, specifically zombies, that did not do well. And
right.
Color me impressed.
The only episode that maybe would be filler, and this is stretching the definition of filler to the nth degree, there's an episode later on when Pablo goes to visit his Bruja, his uncle, who's the witch doctor.
Yeah.
And they don't really do a whole lot in the episode other than show that Kelly's been possessed by a demon from a former episode, and mm-hmm. then Ash is on a spirit journey, which doesn't – he gets kind of the results he needs from that spirit journey. But the thing is it's not even a filler in that sense, because it continues the story. It sets up Pablo to be his own kind of like medicine man, you know, shaman type later on, or at least have that kind of role of the faith-based stuff. It shows another side to the actress Kelly when she's playing the evil character.
Yeah.
And also they use that episode to boost her determination to kick evil's ass after that. She's like, evil rode me like a bitch, just like it did Ash in the original, you know, movies. I'm tired of this shit. I'm going to kick its ass from here on out.
Yeah. So that's not a filler. I've seen that episode, and that was a good one.
Yeah. It's a really good episode. And there's even a scene in the episode, which is so good. Like she's smoking pot out of Ash's shotgun, and it's a really dark moment where she says that she learned it from some guy who she knew that came back from Iraq, which is that's a dark implication, that a former soldier came back and he was smoking his, you know, pot from the barrel of a shotgun. Like, he put the barrel in his mouth and he was you know what I'm saying? Like, it was implying a lot of dark shit. But she's sitting there and she's doing it, and she's flirting with Pablo, and she almost gets him to do it. But while he's getting ready to smoke it, she loads the shell into it, so he's getting ready for him as the demon.
Yeah.
So he'll blow his brains out with it. It's a really well done scene, and I'm just like, that's crazy that they go from that moment where it's just like, well, this is crazy as fuck to see this hot actress just smoking, you know, pot out of the barrel of a shotgun, sucking out like she's going to kill herself, to actually trying to kill Pablo in the same scene, you know.
I would rather have that. See, that is not filler. What was filler was the cop story.
Well, yeah.
That shit sounds like it was filler.
And I said that it was a stretch. I mean, that is the only episode, because every other episode builds on the lore.
Exactly.
And that one does too. I mean, really, But yeah, it's just really good whenever you get a series that takes all the talent of the previous, you know, like movies and all that, and they actually do good with it.
Exactly.
You know, like they did in this.
I just wish we could see more of this type of series with other, you know, other types of movies we've seen.
Other IPs, like, take...
I was going to say IP, but I wasn't sure if that was appropriate. But, like, even if it was a Friday the 13th, like, didn't the Nightmare on Elm Street one didn't do so well either?
Well, they've not tried, like, a series at it. Well, they had Freddy's Nightmares, but it just in name. It wasn't even... Friday the 13th actually had some weird series, too, which had nothing to do with Jason. It was, like, cursed objects that were inside of, like, a pawn shop or something.
Yeah, that doesn't... Yeah, that's a no for me. Like, actually follow through with what the movies gave us, but turn it into a series, you know?
I was going to say they did something like that with Wolf Creek. Remember that movie, the Australian guy that
you did mention?
They actually made a TV show following him, and it's supposed to be really good. Like, if you like the movies,
yeah,
it's like the movies, but it's they they just gave him his own show, like, you know. And that's how, I mean, and they should do that. Just, I was thinking, like, Warm Bodies. If they took the sequel book and they made it into a show, because, you know, usually books are better anyways in that sense, but they got Rob Corddry back. They got, you know, Nicholas Holt back. I mean, would you want something like that? Would that be, if they did it right?
I feel like, yeah, I feel like they could even do the prequel properly as well. Which is what I was reading. I feel like they could. They would have a good storyline. Maybe the only thing is the prequel I read had a lot of filler that was, like, getting kind of old. But I feel like if they trimmed some of the fat, absolutely.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of properties they do it with. I just don't trust modern-day writers to be able to do it justice.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a zombie, it's a zom-drom. Like, you don't have to get woke with it. There's no gay zombies, okay? I hate to say it. There's every different race of zombie, that's for damn sure.
And the funny thing is that movie had, I mean, I wouldn't say woke, but it had progressive stuff
in it. It did, very much, yes.
But they would turn the dial up because that's all they can do anymore.
Yeah.
They, you know, they're not happy with having that subtle message underneath. They're like, you know what? I don't think they realize that this character is supposed to be lesbian and supposed to be an empowered woman. Let's make a scene where we point that out, like, point blank, so that they know that's, no, we don't need that shit. Stop. Like, I mean, trust your audience to have a little bit of intelligence, a little bit of emotional intelligence, and let us figure out what you're trying to say without saying it that way.
You know what's good about the sequel of Warm Bodies, now that we're talking about this, in the book, and this is going to be a tiny bit of a spoiler, but really not, is that they regress R a little bit. And he's trying to still figure out how to be human. So at the end of the movie, he's who he is. He's damn near full human. But in the book, he's regressed a little bit. It's weird. It's not that he's regressed. That's not part of the storyline. It's just that he was never as strong as a human as when he was originally human. So he's still got those zombie tendencies. But
well, the book ends that way too. Like, he doesn't, he's not as human as he is in the movie. The movie gives a happier ending than the book has, technically.
I don't know why it's making me think of Rob Zombie's more human than human, but whatever. Now that song's stuck in my head. But anyways, so he's still got zombie tendencies, meaning he still has a little bit of the hunger, which is pretty interesting because these zombies have to fight that in order to continue becoming human, but it's hard to resist. So I think that would make for a good storyline is what I'm getting at with that.
I don't know why this came up in my mind, and this has nothing to do with this whatsoever, but we was talking about, like, messages and all that, and I don't know what this, I don't think this is anything to do with that. I just thought it was an weird coincidence. I watched Quiet Place Day One.
Oh, today. I heard it was sad.
It's not really a horror movie, first of all.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got tense moments. They're the aliens, whatever. It's a human drama more than anything.
Yeah.
But the main character, Lupita Nyong'o, I think that says her name, Michonne, she has cancer. That's not a spoiler. That's the beginning of the movie. Yes. And she has fentanyl patches that she uses to trigger pain. And that's totally legit, and that is what cancer patients get, but it's just so weird because we have such a crisis right now in America with fentanyl overdosing that I don't know if they intended that to be there or if it, because they show the box of fentanyl like two or three times, and it's just like in the patch, and like I'm sitting here, I'm like, is there something there that they were trying to get across, like, subtly, that it was because she's using it for the right reason, but, like, you know, it, I don't know. It's just weird whenever that was brought up, and it's just like, you know, we got this crisis going on. I don't know if, like, showing the fentanyl is, like, the best thing, but
did it ever imply that if she uses one too many patches, she could end her own life?
It never implies that, and I was waiting for it to do that.
Okay.
And there's a scene in the movie where somebody else applies the patch to her, and I was waiting for them to overdose on it, because if you don't apply those patches just the right way and you touch it, you get it, you know?
Like, okay.
And I was really afraid. There's even a scene where she peels one off that's been, like, damaged, and it sets up kind of her whole plot in the movie, is the fact that she's she's hurting so bad with this cancer because she don't have her patches at that moment, right whenever all the shit happens, because her patch was damaged by, you know, like the chaos. She throws it in a sink there with like a bunch of other people around, and I was waiting for like a kid or something to run in there and grab it. Because they say that too. They're like, do not throw these just anywhere. You have to fold them on themselves to, you know, so that they, you know, dogs, kids, whatever, because they'll die instantly from touching them because there's enough, you know, in the reservoir even after you've used the patch. It's what I do for a living that made me think of it. But when I kept seeing it, I was just like, this is so weird, like having this in this movie, you know?
Yeah. I can blurt this out if you think it's necessary, but there's also a website called Does the Dog Die? And La Arena wants to know, does the cat live?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Woo! Get some cold cuts. Get some cold cuts.
The cute cat lives throughout the whole movie. Frodo makes it to Mount Doom and back.
Yay! So. I'm so excited.
But that's a tangent just to say that, like, it's just weird whenever,
the epidemic that we're going through.
But it's also just like going back to these messages they put in movies. It's like, I don't know if there was a message with that or if they just picked that, because that really is a treatment that they give to people who are in stage cancer. I just don't know. Like,
so how does it not kill the person that needs it? Is it something with the chemistry of their body that they need the fentanyl that it won't kill them versus somebody that accidentally touches the fentanyl patch the wrong way will die?
No, it's because they've been on everything. And then they go on that. So if you've been on Percocets, hydrocodone, tramadol, whatever, if you've been on all that pain medicine, including up to morphine and above, your body is tolerating all that other stuff. So the fentanyl is just one extra thing, and your body's like, okay,
I
can deal with this. Anybody else who's naive, opioid naive, as they call it, they don't have that experience. So their body has never had any of these opioids, and you're giving the strongest opioid right off the bat, and the body's just like, all right, shutting down the lungs, you're dead. You know, that's how it goes.
That's insane right now. I just saw a video about, not to go on a tangent on this right now, but like just a 12-year-old just took a Tylenol from a friend. Wasn't a Tylenol. I'm like, what is happening? You know, so I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's so prevalent right now, and I don't know what the intention of the people making the movie, because they show the box so often. It's like right there, and it says the word fentanyl. I'm like, why is this a commentary?
People could get the wrong idea and be like, well, she's taking it and it's not hurting her, so maybe if I get a prescription grade fentanyl, it won't be so bad, and I can. I don't know. Why do we know why things are being laced with fentanyl? Like, is it to intentionally kill people because it's so easy to hide?
It's several things. The people who were on, I know this is a total tangent for the people in the audience, and I'm sorry. But anyways, so people who got addicted to OxyContins, and that was the one step removed from fentanyl.
Yes.
During, Purdue's, big thing where they got everybody addicted to it. Look up drug sick or dope sick, I think is the name of it. It explains all that. They are jonesing for something similar. So fentanyl is very close to OxyContin. So it created a market for it because those – heroin is the other medicine they went or other drug they went to kind of get that fix, but fentanyl really gives them that fix.
Okay.
So it created a market, but then it just so happens to be so damn easy to just lace shit with it. They're like, fuck, we'll put it in everything. And there's some conspiracy theories out there that the Chinese, in cahoots with a bunch of people down south, have determined that that's the way that they're going to kind of thin out America a little bit, is just kind of like get that Chinese fentanyl up there or fentanyl up there and, kill some of us off,
Oof.
Sorry for the tangent. It's just, I saw it in the movie and I'm just like, why do they keep showing this shit? Like, I don't know. I don't know why they keep showing it.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a little creepy too, kind of.
It's a plot point that she's in pain, and I get it, but it's just they're like in a movie where they show a Coke can to get you to buy Coke.
Yes.
they do that with a fentanyl box. And I'm just like, and it's a legit fentanyl. When I saw it, I'm like, they did damn good because that's what it is. But when I saw it, I'm like, why has that got such a prominent place in the screen?
Like, that's weird. She almost sounds like a waste of energy, but we'll leave that for another tangent if we ever review that movie.
But anyways, we both love this episode. It's a great series. If you've not watched it and you have watched the Evil Dead movies, why the fuck have you not watched this?
Yeah.
It's totally worth your time.
I would say even if you haven't watched the Evil Dead movies and you want to kind of get into the Evil Dead series, you could start with this. You absolutely could be like, hey, what is this about? And then go back and watch Evil Dead. I personally think you could go either way.
They give you enough background that you do not need to watch the original movies. If you do, you get more enjoyment out of it, but you don't have to do it.
Yeah. So they did a great job.
All right, folks, join us next time when we review the 2013 remake of it. Well, it's not really, it's a reimagining of Evil Dead. Same universe, different girl as the main person. But anyways, with that, peace be with you.
And with your spirit.
Leave your kids behind. Come with us and climb the pleasures of the journey to the center of the mind. Come along if you care. Come along if you dare. Take a ride to the land inside.